It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And so the doctor says, I should still be able to have kids, but they'll be almost certainly butt ugly, which originally I thought was super rude, but apparently that's actually a medical term.
Oh.
Yeah, no, like I have all the genetic markers for butt ugly children, he said.
Hmm.
But
well, I should look at my genetics and see.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I'm...
I can give you the license plate of my guy's van.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. Yeah. I'll be able to follow up on
he's
that.
He's got really flexible hours. And
good.
Yeah.
I'll check that's that nice. Out.
God, it's so freaking hot.
It is hot.
It's ridiculous.
Like,
I went out to lunch, I went outside, and I challenged somebody outside to a splash fight, just like with the air. Like, we were going to splash each other with the air. It was that humid.
Mm.
They didn't take me up on it.
I mean, heat advisor and everything.
Yeah. Excessive heat advisory from Wednesday to Saturday. Ugh. Which means the AC is really running, people, which is what that background noise is. Mm. For those of you who are like, that's distracting, you should turn it off. No. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world celebrating the final existence of a female Doctor Who. I know you would think other podcasts would, but if you check them, nobody else is mentioning. Not even the Doctor Who-based ones. It's weird. But we're mentioning it because we think it's awesome. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 332.
Yeah.
I was actually very upset with the announcement of the new Doctor.
Why is that?
Not a ginger.
Yeah.
Do they hate redheaded people or something?
The Brits really hate gingers. It's a thing. It's more of a thing there than it is here.
But it's a nice joke to say, man, I cannot stand what they did with the new Doctor. And people are like, what? You don't like that it's a woman?
I'm not
a ginger.
I'm not going to lie.
It's a great joke.
But I'm not going to lie. There is a non-ironic voice in my head that's like, but she's a white woman.
Well,
but I'm like, you know, Perkins, this is actually...
There's that too.
So I have a coworker and a friend who really did not like Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And as I think I mentioned, this is the same one I mentioned that I'm like, I couldn't talk with them because it made me, like, mad. Well, this happened. A different thing that caused me to snap at them and reference the Wonder Woman thing. And it turned out the reason they didn't like it is because, in their opinion, it was not a feminist film.
Oh.
To which I respectfully disagreed. So since then, and actually this started a fight too, but they sent me links to professional reviewers who also felt it was not feminist.
Yes, I've read many of those.
I have now read some of those. And here's the thing. I agree with probably 80% of the points they make.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's a very feminist film. Like, I don't know, I keep trying to find a parallel. The analogy I came up with is when women got the right to vote, like, finally,
mm-hmm.
were there women around saying, this sucks because it didn't also include state-mandated maternity leave and law requiring equal pay and all that? Like, that seems weird to me. This is not a perfectly feminist movie. It is feminist in so many ways that no other superhero movie has been, and if we do eventually get that ultimate perfect feminist superhero movie, it will owe a debt of gratitude to this film. It will happen on the back of this film.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm like, none of your points are wrong. Why can't we be happy with the good stuff? Because it is such a step in the right direction.
Well, you know, what a lot of people, what a lot of women are noticing, which, you know, I imagine there are some men noticing it too, but it's a lot easier for women to notice it, is how it's shot.
Yep.
Which is such a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tremendously huge deal. But
and I noticed some of it. There were ones that I didn't, and I only had emotional impact, and then you and I would talk about it. I was like, that's why that scene made me feel different than I expected.
Yeah.
And there's just, I mean, and this is the white guy talking, but, like, the argument, like, oh, there's still that bit where the guys talk about how attractive she is, and, oh, my God, a whole island full of women like that. And I'm like, it would be weird if in 1914...
someone didn't
those straight make a men like that? Didn't talk about. I mean, like I get that that's not great, but I mean, it certainly wasn't the point of the film or anything.
Well,
it would be weird if suddenly all of these guys were also feminist. Like, yeah. That would be strange.
It's something, you know. It's something I could have done without, but as you just pointed out, it didn't take away any of the that's other. The,
yeah,
things
you could totally have skipped that scene. And it's fine, but yeah. It wasn't like, oh my God, what the fuck is this?
No, I mean. I'm the first person, you know, there's just a lot of things that I'm sure we've talked about on the podcast where some show had something in it I didn't like and it ruined the whole thing for me. I mean, I'm one of those people for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I still probably can't see the sequel to Kingsman.
And I was...
We've talked about that.
I was bothered by a lot of things in the film, and I've even talked about how ambivalent I was about the film when we first saw it because of those things. But it's so many ways it was such a step forward, I just can't dislike it. I mean, you know, in fact, we've seen it 5 times, and
so much progress.
And I encourage people to watch it. But, yes, I've read those things also, and, I mean, I'd say there's not a single thing in the criticisms that I don't agree with. I just don't take it to the next step, which is, so this movie should be rejected by anyone who's a feminist.
But it was interesting. Because and it gave me perspective to remember this. My argument with her was not dissimilar to the argument we had after you saw Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, right, because and that's actually a great example because I don't get it. I mean, when people say, wow, you know, Furiosa was so groundbreaking and it just made me really like this movie, it didn't have that impact on me at all.
And that's pretty much exactly what my friend said after seeing Wonder Woman. Like, almost verbatim in some ways. Except she didn't say Furiosa, because that would be weird.
But, I mean, so that happens.
And that's the thing. Like, and everything you talked about when we had that discussion about ways in which it was not feminist and ways in which it was trope-filled and cliche, none of them were wrong. Like, I agreed with all of them.
But they didn't matter to you and a lot of other people.
They did. There were just other things that I'm like, they managed this,
right,
and they've never done this in an action movie
that's
before.
What I meant. That's
and
what
they
I meant.
Did this, and the same sort of thing. I would never go so far as to say Mad Max Fury was a feminist movie.
Well, it probably...
I do say that with Wonder Woman.
The difference between those two films for me, too, is that, as I've often pointed out, I'm really not an action movie person.
Yeah, yeah.
So, without certain... things in the film that I was hoping to see because of whatever it was talking about, there wasn't very much else to interest me or entertain me in the film.
And that's what I think it comes down to. It's what the expectations were going in, which is why I frequently find these arguments from people who are some of the last to see what it is. You saw Fury Road way after everybody
that's
else.
Right, that's right.
And she saw it after we were all like, you gotta go see Wonder Woman, you gotta, and then she went and saw it. And one of the reviews that I think was trying to sort of be cute in the way they said this, I don't know, it put me off, but I also thought it made a very interesting point, basically said everybody was making so much of fuss about this, I guess I was kind of hoping it really was. And specifically referenced, like, guys were freaking out about what was going on in these all-women viewings of it and stuff. She's like, I guess I secretly hoped that there was something secret and subversive about this that...
And then, like, it wasn't there.
No. Well, but it's still, there's still lots of good stuff here.
I can understand someone going to the film who's not into superheroes or superhero movies.
Which is the very first thing I asked my friend, but she's seen other ones. She just thought this was just like the other ones.
But I mean, you know, I do like superhero stories. I like DC stories in particular, and Wonder Woman. You know, so there's a lot about it that I'm going to have a bias in favor of. And I freely acknowledge that. So that probably helped my experience.
Anyway, the point, I didn't actually mean to talk about Wonder Woman. The point is, much like that, I think that's what I'm doing in my head, where I'm like, why does it have to be a white woman who's Doctor Who? And then I tell myself, I'm like, stop it. This is a huge deal.
It is.
We've been going for like 60 years, and we finally are getting one. And in fact, like, it's not a coincidence that Moffat's leaving and we're getting one. Because Moffat always claimed that he thought the fan base would leave, because he actually would, at cons, he'd be like, who would stop watching if it was a woman? And a bunch of idiots raised their hand. And so he had said before that he was not going to do it. And this person coming in said, as soon as the job was mine, I knew the next one was going to be a woman. And I'm like, damn straight.
But one of the good things about it is it does open up a discussion about why the Doctor always has to be white.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Well, and you know, and we made progress in the, with, now we've made more progress in representation with companions. So, you know.
Do you think there would have been less of a backlash if it was a male, but say, you know, a male but non-white doctor than
that
if it was a woman?
I honestly don't know. I'm like, who do I think are the louder, the sexist, or the racist? Yeah, I have no idea. And I sort of don't care to, in a way. I don't know.
Well, but see, a lot of the arguments I've heard about changing the gender, which are so dumb, I can't even believe some of these people call themselves fans. It's like, do you not understand how this works? But some of the arguments are not the same arguments someone would use if he was non-white. They couldn't use those same arguments. Yeah. So it just seems like maybe they wouldn't have any, would still.
The show is so hand-wavy. He could regenerate as a dog and it wouldn't screw up canon.
That's kind of what I mean.
The show has a wizard do shit a lot of times. There's a lot, no. I mean, hell, just the fact that he regenerated this time and we didn't debate that, because I've discussed this with friends, and based on some of our views, including mine, he shouldn't have any regenerations at this point.
I've heard that. But, I've heard that he should have run out.
And it's arguably, because they addressed that issue in an earlier one, and then they did some hand-wavy bullshit, so he got another one. But in my head, he got another regeneration. Some people think he got a reset, so now he's got all of them again. But, yeah, I don't... See, to me, that's even... But the show just makes up shit that, there's no way you can be like, no, it has to be a white guy. Like, that doesn't even make
sense. I always thought it would be fun if they just really nailed it into people's heads that, well, he's only got so many, and then he's done.
Yeah.
And then right when everyone thinks he's done, he's going to die, he regenerates one more time. Oh, but now he's a woman, so now they're going to be female for a while.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
You see what I'm saying?
That
so,
would be
cool. He only had this many, but then she has this many.
That would be interesting.
And then he has this many again. You
and
see
then,
what I'm saying?
And then.
Or maybe some other form.
Then 13 dogs.
Yeah, 13 or whatever. See, that would be
and
cool.
Then 13 planaria, but really that's like a 3-minute thing, not a real issue.
But that would be cool, right?
Yeah, I could go like, with that.
Because that would be a surprise.
I'll tell you the thing I'm worried about now.
What's that?
Bill is awesome. Bill is absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
One of the many awesome things about Bill is that Bill is a lesbian, so there was none of this secret girl crush, will they, won't they, sexual tension bullshit. And I'm like, shit. We got the first confirmed lesbian companion, and then immediately afterwards, the first female doctor. I'm like, God damn it, are we going to do that again? I don't want her to be pining. I don't want there to be sexual tension. I don't want will they, won't they.
Well,
so I'm worried that there will they won't take.
Because of what they've been doing with the Doctor in the news stuff especially, because they, you know, there has been sexual tension between the Doctor and female companions.
Pretty much constantly except for the break with Donna and then since Peter Capaldi.
Right.
And even with the break with Donna, we had to work really hard to sort of reinforce that.
And there's only the slightest suggestion that, I mean, the very slight, and to the degree where I don't think the Doctor has been established as anything else but a heterosexual, heteronormative man.
No. The Doctor is pretty confirmedly bi.
Oh, are you sure about that? Because every time people tell me that, and I think, you mean like, especially in relation to Captain Jack and stuff?
There is that, no, but they do toss off lines a whole bunch referring to it.
It seems so
Alex too Kingston's character, River Song, and they went back and forth talking about how they cheated on each other. There was at least one male name in the list she was saying about him.
Really?
Stuff like that. Yeah, okay, no, well, they purposely...
I must have missed that.
Doctor Who post-reboot cannot stop patting itself on the back for its racial and especially for its sexual orientation.
Right, but it seemed like always in
every
relation...
Every time they do it, it's a very big deal.
It seemed like always in relation to the Doctor, it winked at it, but it never outright said it.
No, I mean,
But if you're saying
insofar, it never outright said it any more than it outright said he's heterosexual. If you're going based on that, he's equally likely to be asexual.
No, he's like on screen with Billy Piper, and there's clearly he's in love with her and stuff. I mean,
that's true. He did love Billy.
You don't see that. You don't see that with a man ever. And you know
even then I would say that's heteroromantic, not heterosexual.
Yeah, perhaps.
Hey, if we're gonna split hairs to this degree, we gotta do that.
That's true, but I'm just saying that it's very obvious that he is attracted to women, and he had a wife eventually, a female wife,
yeah,
or whatever.
True.
But you, if you've got two columns, male and female, with how he relates to them, there's a lot in the female column. And I don't recall anything in the male column except what you just said, but I don't remember that.
I'll put it this way. I am confident that the writers and creators of the show post-reboot, in some form, have intentionally meant to heavily imply, if not outright say, that he is bisexual.
Okay.
On purpose.
All right, well then, then I can't imagine that they're going to feel like it's a very feminist thing to constantly, while there's a man in the role, have romantic entanglements and tension and whatever, but when we have a woman in the role, she's going to be like asexual or something. I mean,
no, but I don't think they're worried about what's feminist, but I agree with you that they're not going to do that. It's a female character. If anything, they'll probably do it more annoyingly.
That's usually the case, right?
Yes.
But even if they didn't want to do that, to take out romantic entanglements entirely would also seem to be going the wrong direction.
Yeah, and I can't think of any. Well, actually, I do know some people, but in general, from a feminist perspective, and from a ratings perspective, that's a bad idea.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is that just about any way you look at it, outside of maybe you do want to represent asexual, whatever, which I think would be very cool. Outside of that, any way you look at it, they're probably going to have some kind of romantic thing going on somewhere. And they're going to have to decide if that's going to be a man or a woman, or they're going to do both. And if it's going to be a woman, is it going to be the companion, or is it not? I mean, they've got to be thinking about it.
Absolutely.
It's definitely going to come
I
out.
I think they're going to do it. I really don't want them to. That's why
what
I
would
said.
You, what would you
that
rather
was my
they do?
Original
I know,
point.
But what would you rather they do?
Anyone other than Bill.
Okay, so
I don't want it to be Bill.
You just don't want it to be her.
I don't want the doctor and the companion making moon eyes at each other. I haven't liked it since the beginning of the series, and I was pleased that we had put in essentially a failsafe, so now we couldn't do it. And now we have taken that failsafe away, and lesbians are super hot. So, yeah, no, that's totally going to happen, and I don't want it to.
I don't see how they're going to avoid it, because, I mean, one of the things...
Pick somebody else.
I know, but one of the things they've built in to the new Doctor especially is how compelling this new Doctor is to literally everybody that she meets. And so the person that's spending the most time
not
with...
sexually compelling to every person.
I didn't say sexually compelling, just compelling.
Okay.
And so that whoever's hanging out with him the most, if there is orientational compatibility there, I'm not saying they have to do it. I'm not saying
they
want them.
They didn't do it with Donna.
That's true. They didn't do it with Donna. And that worked great.
Absolutely.
I love
absolutely.
That. I love that.
I love Donna. And by the way, just to throw in there, because a lot of people did this, I find Catherine Tate, and in particular Catherine Tate in that role, to be perfectly attractive.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
A lot of people are like, well, they didn't with her because she was ugly. And I'm like, fuck off.
But they did, though. They did have her, like, have a fiancé or a guy that...
Yeah.
I mean, they did cover it somehow.
No, but they established in the beginning. They made, like, jokes about it and shit. Like, how committed both of them were to never having that be
a
thing.
Yeah, yeah. So does Bill have a significant other already?
Not at all, no.
Oh,
she has somebody she's dated once or twice.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
Well, and we've established a relationship between them that looks very parental.
Hmm.
To the degree that a lot of people... Well, I don't know a lot of people. A friend had a very compelling theory that she was actually Susan, Doctor Who's original granddaughter. In the beginning of Doctor Who, he left with his granddaughter, Susan, and traveled around. And so they thought she was going to be her. And in their dream, he stops regenerating. He's out of regenerations. She essentially takes over the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's never going to happen. It would be super awesome. Never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have established a relationship, but it's also a common thing for the relationship to get shooken up and redefined
after
when they regenerate, because it's hard to deal
yeah.
with the fact that this person you knew is a different person.
Yeah.
And especially the way Doctor Who does it, which is commendable, it's not just a cosmetic change. The personality shifts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it has to, because it's a new actor. But, yeah, and so that's a thing. And I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with us addressing the lesbian elephant in the room. But it's just Rose and Martha. And
see, I love that character, but I hated the way they did that relationship.
The sexual tension never... It always felt icky to me. It never made real sense to me.
No, right.
And it was just annoying. And also, I knew it was never going to happen. The closest we came is to create a human clone of him that can run off to another dimension with one of them to be together. It's never going to happen. Hell, technically, we don't know that River and the Doctor had a sexual relationship. It is heavily implied. Mm. It would be surprising if they did not, but we technically don't even know
that's true.
And so it's just it's annoying. And I love Bill so much. And it's also, you know how much I love lesbians in all sorts of contexts. It's cheap.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is what we're going to do now because it's two girls. Ooh.
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's such a cheap move.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
totally agree.
Now, if you want to address it, talk about it, absolutely, which I think is fair because it would be weird to be like, you just changed from an old person of a gender I'm not interested in to a fairly young, attractive person of a gender I am interested in. Maybe we should address this. Like,
well,
that's fine.
And your personality is completely different.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not even like you're the real,
yeah,
the same person.
I don't want the pining. I don't want the will they won't they. That's what I don't want. So please, Chris, whoever.
I guess the point I was making earlier was, it seems like they're going to run into a problem no matter what they do, because if immediately the new Doctor is visibly attracted to men in a way that she's not. It doesn't show that she's attracted to women. Isn't that going to make people say, what happened there? That's weird. Are you just avoiding the whole...
Well, I doubt they will do that, honestly.
Really? Well, what do you think they'll do?
I think the sexuality will probably be kept ambiguously bi, as usual.
Okay.
And I think it also vastly depends on how the rest of the universe responds to a female doctor.
Hmm.
Because they... Missy already broke a lot of rules. Missy immediately kind of crushed on the Doctor as soon as she showed up. And as time has gone on, it's sort of shown that that's a little bit just playing around and a little bit we have this deep relationship and this is the first time where it's in this sort of context.
You don't think that the male actor did this a little bit of the same thing?
I did not at all, no.
Oh, really?
I got no sexual tension between... I mean, which male actor? But I assume you mean the most recent version. The Master's been played by like 12
that's
people.
That's right. The most
I got
one,
no
right.
sexual tension between Matt Smith and Derek Jacobi ever. David Tennant and Derek Jacobi. Which is fun. Is Derek Jacobi gay? I think he might be.
Oh, really? I don't know.
I mix this up. I get a problem because he's in that show with Ian McKellen, but I'm like, I can't. But I think he actually is. But no, I did not ever get that from any of the other Masters.
Hmm. Okay.
And some of that, I think, the Master likes to play with the concept. And the Master enjoys being taboo and perverse, so suddenly be like, hey, here's a new component to our relationship kind of thing. But as time goes on, I think you saw that it was... It's just covering the very complicated, very close relationship that they have always had. The love-hate thing that they've had going.
But
how the universe is going to respond to a female doctor is... That's going to determine a lot of things.
But there wasn't a backlash with the Master...
No, but it's not like the Master had fans and friends places and stuff like that.
So the concept opened it up for the Doctor to...
No, absolutely. But what I'm saying is... There were no people who had, like, established relationships with the Master and were like, okay, now it's weird because you're a woman. Basically, there are only people who survived the Master who are just still terrified no matter what body he's in, or dead people. The Master doesn't have friends.
Okay, but I'm talking about the fan reaction.
I don't fucking care.
Okay.
I don't care what the fans want. I'm saying that right now. I do not care what the fans want, ever.
Okay, I just thought... I just don't remember when the Master regenerated and was a woman, I don't remember the fans going crazy or
no. I was that. I don't remember that either. There may have been because it's a villain thing, and there's also the thing. We got to know Missy pretty well before we found out who she was, and it was really hard to say no to her at that point because she was so awesome. So that could be some of it too. But no, I was thinking that earlier. I'm like, there may have been, but I just don't hang out in those circles.
I mean,
generally speaking, on any of this stuff, the shit about John Boyega and being a black stormtrooper, I would never have heard a peep about that controversy except for the articles that told me. And I mean, and they showed me tweets on it and stuff like that. But like, if I had not seen those articles, like, it wouldn't have shown up in my Twitter feed or my Facebook or anything.
Oh, I just find that stuff so weird. It's like,
yeah, no, it's
why bullshit. Do you care about? And
well, and here's how you know it's bullshit, because it happened in the Hunger Games, when they had the audacity to cast a character who was explicitly written as black with a black actress, and people flipped out.
Well, and people rarely complain about whitewashing this way, like
it's only the white people who are complaining.
But I mean,
no black person was like, why the fuck is there a black stormtrooper? Like, that's if that happened, then I want to see that person because I've never seen a unicorn in real life.
But I, you know, you hear people say, well, they make the
it's canon
weirdest arguments about it, or like it doesn't serve the story. How does it? What difference does it make?
No, yeah.
It doesn't hurt the story.
No.
It might not even help the story, but who cares?
At worst, it's neutral.
Yeah, it's just what they decided to do for whatever reason. Why do you care so much about this? And you can tell these people know that they don't have any good reason. They know that they only have a racist or sexist reason because you can tell by how defensive they are. And they're not even trying, I don't think, to come up with anything that makes sense. They just want to complain about it and for everybody else to listen to them complain about it. I don't know. I find it bizarre. I don't know.
I didn't realize until recently. We talked about Spider-Man last time, right?
I don't think you'd seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Then we'll talk about that in here. Now we're like half over. For those of you who don't know, this is pretty much what the show is like, but officially, here's the show. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, cool people like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. With little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Servants. I'm really tired of having started that tradition. I'm okay with most of my other ones, but I don't like that one anymore. I may just stop completely. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show. The show is half over. We haven't even gotten into that. Oh, shit, I gotta talk about Spider-Man too. Wow, alright, there's a lot of stuff going on. How was your week?
Well, we can just go right to your week if you've got a lot to talk about.
Well, I have one video game and three movies.
Go ahead.
Still playing Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Still love it. Having a blast. Did I tell you, though, they advertised it wrong to talk about this?
I think you did say.
Yes, because all you need to say is you're in Victorian London and you have a zipline gun. It's just awesome, then. It's also awesome, I mean, it would have been cool if they could just make a fucking game with a female protagonist like they did before. But it's nice having the option.
Mm.
And so, like, I'm doing shit like the fight clubs. I only take Evie in there because it is awesome to watch her kick the shit out of those guys. And I caught myself. In the beginning, I was like, I wonder, because certain things you have to do with certain, because of the personalities and adjacent skill sets, certain missions are very specifically one or the other. And in fact, that's sort of the point of this story, is they show up in London and they both have very drastically different ideas about what they should be doing.
Mm.
And so one of them sort of follows a path of missions for this one goal, and one of them follows a path of missions for. So when it's stuff specifically related to that, you have to play as that one.
Gotcha.
So in my head, I was like, they're probably going to make you play as the dude in these fistfight tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't. And I caught myself because I was like, well, maybe I should, because he's definitely more of a brawler. That's how his... And then I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You've been playing the girl, and every chance you get, just keep playing her. And I did, and I never looked back, because it's awesome. Just these huge guys coming in and just beat the shit out of them. So much fun. So yeah, still enjoying the hell out of that game. Haven't even progressed that far in the story, but played it a lot.
Okay.
Just all the side quests and things like that, so I'm really into it. I would... Yeah, see, the problem is, it's hard... I think it's bad to play an Assassin's Creed game in a vacuum, because I feel like it does build on itself. But I almost am like, your wife should play this game. I think she would like it. But
maybe.
If so, I can sit down with you guys for like a half hour and give you a primer leading up to the game, so then you'll be okay.
Okay.
Because all the really good story was actually in the earlier games anyway. Yeah, and then I saw some movies I gotta talk about. We should talk Spider-Man Homecoming. I really didn't talk about this. I guess it's on this weekend. Okay. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. Definitely think it's the best Spider-Man movie so far. Including all the Sam Raimi stuff. I know we love the Sam Raimi stuff for a reason, but I like this better.
Okay.
A lot of the stuff I don't like about it is not the fault of the movie. It's Spider-Man stuff. It's that I don't like Spider-Man. And I feel like, because this has been coming up lately, I don't like Peter Parker. I have nothing against Spider-Man's skill set. It's kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Being Spider-Man would be cool. I don't like Peter Parker. I both don't like having to live through the teenage bullshit. And I also don't like that he's one of these last vestiges of these honest-to-goodness assholes, in my opinion, who are like, no matter what happens, I'm going to keep everyone else safe by telling them nothing. And consequently, my life sucks for it, and sometimes their life sucks for it. But it's safer this way. I'm certainly not going to give them the opportunity to decide for themselves. And the reason I say this is because it really got brought home reading the Dresden Files, because that is absolutely the character those books start off with. But guess what? Over time, he actually learns that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
He still has that instinct, but there are several times, and in fact, it's really awesome to see him, like, 6-7 books in, to talk about, like, how he finally got that it wasn't his call to make, and how it was stupid, and I'm like, and Peter Pan, I almost duh, but I feel like that might be Freddy in there. Peter Parker never learns that shit, and to be fair, in this one, he's 15. This is another thing. Everything in this movie is Peter Pan's. is Peter Parker's fault.
Everything, huh?
Pretty much. Wow. Like none, the bad stuff that happened in this movie,
mm-hmm.
none of it would have happened if Peter Parker had not decided, you know what? All the adults in my life are full of crap. I'm going to go do stuff on my own. Like, literally everything. Now, don't get me wrong. The bad guys are bad guys, and they chose to do the shitty stuff that we then had to deal with. But they were bad guys before this, and sort of, I'm not going to say victimless crime, but it was low level, like nobody was getting killed, shit like this. And specifically, the shit started going down because Spider-Man got involved. And that's only like half of it. Half of it is also just shit that Spider-Man screwed up and everyone almost died. Like, so I have... It's, in my opinion, is a very unheroic story.
Yeah.
But it is definitely meant to seem as a heroic story and is treated as though it is a heroic story. And I find that annoying. That being said, it is really well crafted. They nailed the Peter Parker vibe, in my opinion.
Okay.
They nailed the teenage vibe. Like, there's just this awesome montage of him being a local crime fighter, but with this sort of realistic spin. Okay, minor spoilers, again, but like, there's where like some guy's jimmying a car open and he webs him to the spot so he can't do it, and it turns out it's like his car. And he was trying to, and like the neighbors are out. He's like, why are you screwing? Don't take his car, that's his car. He's like, no, I was trying to stop it. Why are you, like, this kind of stuff. There's one where you just see him giving someone directions. Like, this, just little shit like this. Which is super real and, like, yeah, and funny. And I like that. The action scenes were very impressive. There is a character named Michelle. She plays a very small role in this movie. There are implications she might play a larger role later. She's the best thing ever. She's just another student who's incredibly disaffected by everything. She goes to detention not because she's in trouble, but because, quote, I like to sketch people in crisis. And I want to see the movie where we find out she's like a god that's been punished to be on Earth or something. I want that movie. It seems so awesome to me. I should also say there are two instances of shawarma at the end. Neither of them matter in MCU terms. There's no like hints of things to come. They are both good. The last one is my favorite shawarma ever, other than the shawarma that caused me to start calling them shawarma.
Okay.
It's hilarious, and I love it. It's brilliant. Hannibal Buress has a small role in this movie, and again, is perfectly cast. It's well done. It's the best Spider-Man movie I've seen. I do recommend it. I didn't love it as well. And this is a hard thing right now. I loved Wonder Woman a lot. Outside of feminist issues, I love that movie. And it's making all other superhero movies. I'm like, well, but it wasn't, you know? So I was like, Michael Keaton, amazing. They did amazing jobs with him as Vulture.
That's what I heard.
And that's the great thing. The very opening, nothing to do with Peter Parker. It's entirely just sort of a Vulture's origin story, basically. Mm. And it's awesome. I don't give Michael Keaton enough credit. And I'll tell you why I don't.
Okay.
In his very early days, he was about physical comedy. He was still brilliant. Mr. Mom, Beetlejuice, shit like this. Funny as hell. But it was a lot of slapstick and physical comedy, which is not my thing. Mm. And then there was I don't know if you remember this, but there was a really short time period where he was kind of romantic leading man for a while.
Yeah, I guess.
It's sort of, you know, Multiplicity was around that era and stuff. And even Batman to agree. And I really feel like that was not a good fit for him. Mm. And that was, I think, in my formative years. Because that's the thing. So now I seem like I see The Other Guys. Did you ever see The Other Guys?
No.
Hilarious cop movie. And he's in it. And he plays a very... like Leslie Nielsen-esque, very straight character that's meant to be comedic. And I'm like... wow, it's really good to see Michael Keaton can stretch and do comedy. I'm like, wait a second. But that's the thing. When he's in that line in between, and especially those rare times where they really make him a villain, he can do such a good job of that. And he's never, like, intimidating in the normal way. He's always kind of nice and normal, but he can still be scary as hell. And that's very much what's going on here. So that was fun. I should hear, because that's not the part I want to talk about. So yeah, go see Spider-Man. It's good. Saw two other movies. Coincidentally, they were both horror movies about all girls boarding schools. And I really
seems
do mean...
like there's probably a lot of those.
I do mean coincidentally to the degree that I didn't realize the similarities until I was reading... After I saw the last one, I read a review because it's fairly recent. And in the review... they referenced the other one I had seen. Okay. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess they are kind of similar. So yeah, first, because it just showed up on one of the streaming services I do, I watched the 1977 Dario Argento classic Suspiria, which Dario Argento is considered a classic, like grandfather of European horror kind of thing. He's made a lot of European horror and is much beloved for that. Suspiria is considered one of his greats. And so I'd always meant to see it. It is good. I'm starting to think he may not be my kind of director. He's very much a style over substance guy, which can be cool, but I do get a little... sometimes I like more intricate story. But it was fun. I mean, it was very 70s. It cracks me up. It was made in 77. It's rated PG-13. That rating did not exist in 1977.
That's right.
But, I will say, I feel like it's accurate. Like, okay. There was no nudity, there was no particular swearing, but there was definitely lots of mature themes and stuff like that. It wasn't especially bloody, but, you know, I wouldn't call it a kid's film. But it was interesting. It was very well shot. I enjoyed that. I have a thing for, like, Italian horror. Not quite the giallo crime movies, but in that sort of realm. So that was kind of fun. And then I watched The Black Coat's Daughter. Originally titled February when it first came out. And that is a very recent independent horror film. I gotta give it credit for being somewhat original. It's a story about boarding school and secret people worshiping Satan, which is as cliched as it gets. But it's not. Like, it's... You're probably never gonna watch it, right?
I doubt it.
Alright. Guys, I'm gonna legit spoil a horror movie whose entire thing is based off of twists. So, if you want to watch The Black Coat's Daughter, and if you'd like a scary movie, I would recommend it. Skip this next part.
Okay.
So, well, maybe I won't spoil everything, but there's going to be a spoiler. It's set in this girls' Catholic school, and it's time for break. And two girls, their parents don't show up. And one of them is like a senior. It's like a high school age, and one of them's a senior. And she accidentally told them the wrong day, and it turns out that's because she wanted to go out with her boyfriend and actually tell him that she might be pregnant and stuff like that. And then the other one's a freshman, and they just legit, nobody knows where her parents are. And so they're sort of stuck there, and they don't really get along and all this, but it's weird. Everything is very creepy. Everybody's, like, slightly off. And the whole thing is just a little... Everything's just sort of creepy, and everybody looks too intense and stuff like that.
This is all very familiar so
far. Yes,
yes.
And then eventually, we switch over to what appears to be an unrelated story of a girl who is just... Like you see... The first time you see her, she's getting off at a bus. Getting off a bus, and she's stuck at the bus terminal, and she's freezing because it's snowing. She's hanging out there. And then this nice guy comes along, and he's like, where are you going? And we'll give you a lift and all this. It seems unrelated. You do get a suspicion, though, because as the car drives off, you see he has a bumper sticker for the same school.
Okay.
Oh. So there's a lot of who's going to turn out to be the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a lot of what is the order of these things?
Because
we sort of do the movie where we spend a part dealing with one girl, a part dealing with the other girl, and a part dealing with the third girl.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. And we replay certain scenes from different perspectives.
Oh.
And what it basically comes out to is, and you find this in bits and pieces throughout, but the freshman girl's parents died on the way to pick her up. And... that essentially, that fear or whatever, left her vulnerable to, I guess, the devil. It's this demon we very seldom see. It's this silhouette with horns.
Okay.
That sort of possessed her and told her before anybody else knew that her parents had died and things like that. And she finds her in the basement basically worshipping at the furnace. Like, the other girl finds her down there, and she's, like, worshipping at the furnace, and that's all weird and stuff. And then later, she kills everybody. She kills the older girl, she kills the two girls, the two older women nuns, I think, that were sort of housing. She murders everybody.
Okay.
And cuts off their head and goes down and worships at the furnace. Eventually, the cops find her. They shoot her. She gets sent to, asylum, basically.
Okay.
Well, but first she gets exorcised, sorry. She gets exorcised by the priest, and you actually see, because you see the demon, like, leaving, and she's really sad about it. Like, she's like, no, stay with me. But the demon leaves, and then they throw her in insane asylum. 9 years later, she breaks out and takes on a different identity, and she's the girl that they pick up in the car, and the people in the car are the parents of the girl she killed. 9 years ago, we now found out. And she's just trying to get back to the school to worship, to get the demon back, basically.
Okay.
And so she murders people, but she goes down there, and the place has been abandoned for years. And so it's just a cold and empty furnace.
Okay.
And so, like, the last, like, 2 minutes of the film is a shot of her outside in dead silence, just sobbing and screaming because, like, this was the thing she was going back for. Like this was her only companion, for lack of a better term, that she knew, and it's gone. And so she's so sad about essentially losing the devil. And it was just a weird, like, it was a weird sympathy for a Satanist kind of thing. It was also really fascinating to me with this play. Like I said, everybody's so creepy, you're like, I'm not sure who the bad ones are. For a long time, I was like, that priest molested somebody. But no, that was not a thing, and yeah, it just was weird. And a long time, I'm like, okay, one of these girls is going to murder everyone. But I couldn't figure out which one for the longest time. But it was fascinating, so... That was kind of fun. This is the same person... This is, it's someone's... someone famous's son who's been directing these and got a lot more credit for the Netflix one, I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. It's a ghost story that was on there. Nice. That was also this person.
Saw that.
Technically, this movie was made before that one, but it was released after that one.
Okay.
What did you think of that? Because I haven't seen that yet. But this one makes me curious about that one.
It was interesting. I mean, it's different, I thought. You know, it's not really my thing, so I don't know if I'm qualified to say if it was good or bad. But I didn't hate it. And I thought it was very interesting. I don't know if I'd recommend it or not. I probably should have talked about it when I saw it, but
I still feel like horror is a genre where you're allowed to break with convention and break taboos so much more than other. I think that's part of why I like them. That and of course the whole thing that I like my life to be relatively calm and stress-free, so I enjoy watching stories about other people going through stress, so I can, like, vicariously have the experience without actually being stressed. And horror movies, super stressed. And also, I'm never like, oh, shoot, now I have anxiety that I'm going to go in the basement and read from the goddamn book covered in human skin and then be slaughtered for it. Like, these are not fears I have. Which is why I don't watch the horror movies of a guy breaks in and kills everybody, because I'm like, you know what? Could happen.
That could happen, yeah.
But the one where I accidentally summon the devil? No, I'm good. I was talking with somebody other than this is one of the stupidest things about my atheism. Sometimes when I'm watching a movie like that, and you know, like, there's the words that summon the demon, and they say them on accident, or they read them in the book, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I will say them out loud while I'm watching the movie, because I am now, unlike when I was younger, confident it's not a real thing in any form, but it's ingrained in me enough that there's still sort of a taboo thrill to it. It makes me a little nervous, but I also know it's not a thing, so I'll do that sometimes. Like, I wish the goblins would take you away,
like,
right now.
It's like a little kid kind of thing. It's like a little kid saying a dirty word or something.
Sort of. Except except it's the opposite. I know it's not bad.
Or do you?
No, that's the thing. I'm like, no, obviously not. But also, like, as a kid, I remember that being a thing. Like, it took me a long time to admit that Freddy Krueger wasn't a real thing. And I finally had to be like, okay, I'm not saying that scary monsters and ghosts don't exist, but I know that one was made up by the movies, and that was, like, how I was willing. And it took me forever to get to that point. So there's still a part of me that's like, well, and that's the problem, is me doing that is the first act of an admittedly very shitty horror movie.
Right.
That's legit how a horror movie starts, is I'm watching a horror movie, and I say the thing to summon Satan, because I have no belief in it, and I pay the price for my hubris.
Yeah, for the next 2 hours.
Exactly. So there's just I mean, it doesn't stop. I've never been like, no, I won't do it. Like, that's never happened. I'm confident enough, but it's still like yeah, it's very weird. All right, we are so close to out of time. We should probably draw something out of the hat. I have monopolized the fuck out of this episode.
That's all right.
I have spoiled multiple movies.
I didn't have a lot to talk about anyway. Let's see. Coffee wants to know.
What does Coffee want to know?
If a crystal ball could tell you the truth about yourself, your life, the future, or anything else, What would you want to know?
Not the future in general. I feel like that's sort of a waste. And I also don't like the paradox of, you know, the future and then yeah. the future changes.
Yeah, I don't think
just
I'd
in general, I don't want to fuck with the timeline.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ask about that
either. I would love to know. Well, I say that. I mean, I'm sure I would live to regret it, but I would love to know the truth about me. Like, can you tell me the things I'm in denial about? The things I do well that I don't realize I do well. The things that I'm shitty at that I don't realize I'm shitty at. The things that I've been blocking out. The things that I am confident about myself in that I really shouldn't be. Or the things that I'm, like, really nervous about that I actually am really, like, mostly the stuff I'm in denial about.
That's everything.
I would love to know.
Everything
that
you just mentioned is all the stuff I'd want to know, too.
I would also want to know.
But I wouldn't know how to ask for it.
I would also want to, in the brilliantly eloquent way I just did. I also would want to know. Oh, this is dangerous, but I would want to know how my actions impact others. Because, I'll put it this way. I don't think I'm a great friend to most people. But I'm pretty sure most of my friends think I'm a really good friend.
How does that work?
Well, one of us is wrong.
You think that's
wrong?
Or,
more accurately, we have different frames of reference. So I think I'm a bad friend because the kind of friend I want to be is much better than I am.
Oh,
They think I'm a great friend because compared to their other friends or compared to what they expect from me, I'm above and beyond.
Gotcha.
Like, but that's what I would like to know, like, for real. Because there's weird things like that. People say, like, do you really think I'm a good friend or are you just nice? The one I love is I have friends that will totally talk shit about people behind their back, which I'm fine. I do that, too. Now, in my defense, if anybody ever called me on it, I would say it to their face, too. But just in general, if I want to bitch about somebody, just to sort of vent or whatever, I bitch about you. I don't bitch about you to you. I bitch about you to somebody else. That kind of thing. And I'm like, I'm sure people do that about me. There's so many things to do that about. And I have friends who actively engage in this action with me about other people who swear they never do that about me. And I'm like, either I'm really boring, or you're really clueless, or you're not telling the truth.
Well,
so that's the kind of stuff. I'm like, when I think I'm supporting you, is it really helpful? When, you know, do you actually like having me around, or are you too polite to say no? What is it that I do that is really good for you? Then I could do more of that. What do I do that hurts your feelings that I don't know about because you don't consider it a big enough deal to tell me? That kind of thing. I would love to know that stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to know that stuff too.
I mean, like I said, I would live to regret this information because I'm sure I'd find stuff that was horrifying to face. I'm secretly super duper racist, you know, something like that.
Yeah, but you'd want so badly not to be that.
I think it'd be worth
it.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. It's easier to work on improving yourself when you know what the areas are that need improvement. And you can make your best guess, but, you know, if I could have something that objectively could be like, no, this is what it is, that'd be cool.
Maybe I would just ask, tell me what I have to do to make sure that when I leave this world, it's a better place than when I got here. And I don't mean like the whole world, necessarily. Yeah. Just whatever area, whatever my scope of influence is, however small or great, don't care about that part of it. I just want to make sure that whatever it is, it's better than when I got here. Just tell me what that thing has
to be. I'm pretty sure that would make the crystal ball like smoke and stop working. Because I think there's too many options.
Well, yeah,
there's probably 8 bajillion different things you could do that would match that. Some of them involve you dying tomorrow. Others of them involve you getting really wealthy. Others of them involve, like, there's so many different ways that could be answered.
Right, but it's essentially asking all the questions you just asked, which is a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I suppose they're very specific, but
nobody said I had limited wishes.
No. But I mean, that essentially, that's...
My first insight is to wish for a million insights.
The reason I would ask all the same questions that you would ask is just so that I could be better.
Yeah.
For people, because that's what I want. But when, as you're talking about this, though, it makes me think about how hard it is. And why is it so hard? And part of it is what you were saying a second ago, is that you don't really get adequate feedback, right? Like, people won't tell you the things you need to know to be better. Either, not only will they often not tell you even the good things you're doing. Like, it's not that they don't want to hurt your feelings, mm-hmm. because they could tell you something good. That's not going to hurt your feelings, but they won't think to do it, or they won't do it. And certainly if it's bad, they won't do it, because, again, they don't want to hurt your feelings. And so it's like, well, how am I going to get better then? How am I going to do more of the things that I'm doing right and less of the things that I'm doing wrong if people don't tell me? And even if you ask, they won't tell you because they don't think you really want to know.
Well, not even necessarily that. There's a variety of things. There is... I'm going to be really vague here because I'm not going to tell you about it. There is something that in our years of conversation you have asserted to something you do and the motivations for doing it. I believe you believe that. I don't believe the motivations you think are the true ones. I don't tell you this for a few reasons. It's a thing that's trivial, is the big one. So I don't want to deal with the argument. Also, and mostly, like, even if I like immediately said it and you were like, oh, you're right, like, it wouldn't have any impact, so I don't bother. But also, I don't... It's not about me. Like, it's not something you do to me or anything like that. So I'm like, it's just my opinion. It's not the truth. So why is that useful at all? And that's a mild version. I have things with other people like that. There's stuff that I'm like, you know what? This person really has this problem. And if they came to me and were like, do you think I have this problem? I'd be like, yeah, I do. But just in day to day, I'm not going to be like, you know, what's your problem? And so there are things like that. There's always the factor that it's subjective. So even if they're telling you, it's subjective.
Yeah, but I'm talking about things where people can clearly see you're spinning your wheels on this deal. You know, they can clearly see that you need to know, but they just don't want to be the person to tell you. But also...
See, I don't encounter that so much, and I would say those people are kind of being bad friends.
As I said before, there's also positive things a person can point out that they won't. For whatever reason, that I don't understand. Because I do understand it, because I don't hesitate to tell people when I'm impressed with them, because I don't know why I should. But I have often gotten very negative responses to that kind of thing. Not frequently from the person that I'm speaking to, although that happens too. Like, they don't believe me, mm-hmm. or they think I'm after something.
Yeah. They think I'm... Well, and that becomes just a whole social problem.
But frequently, other people, you know, will think that I'm trying to manipulate this person, or I'm trying to gain favor with this person against somebody else, or if this person is a superior to me in any way. I don't mean like a boss necessarily, but someone who...
If there's any perception of conflict of interest.
Yeah, I'm a kiss-up or any number of other thing, or some political motive, which it never is, because I don't care about that stuff.
No.
I mean, if I realized I was in a relationship where everyone around me thought this was a political thing, and everyone else was acting politically, and they were interpreting everything I was doing as a political thing, I would say, well, I'm out. And I would just leave that situation, because I can't deal with that.
Here's something that happened with me and you, but it has happened with me and other people, too. So I'm really mean. I pick on you all the time and stuff.
Well, that's
and
not sometimes, mean. I don't care.
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes it goes later, I'm like, that was too far. And I have sent you things, and I'm like, I'm sorry about that.
Sure.
And almost always, you're like, it wasn't, whatever, doesn't matter. I didn't even notice, you'll often say. But I do recall one situation where I did that, and you were okay with it. But, like, in your acceptance of my apology was an acknowledgement that I really was kind of not nice, and that was not okay. And I'm like, well, and now in this conversation, I'm like, but you didn't tell me that on your own.
No.
And if I had not apologized, you probably never would have.
That's right.
And it's... And I mean, I get that, but I'm saying that's the circumstance people are sometimes in. is like, if you did something shitty, if I don't think it's systemic or it didn't like hurt my feelings really bad or something like that, I'm probably not going to tell you. If you come to me and say, was I really shitty, or I'm sorry I was really shitty, I'll be like, yeah, it was a little, or yeah, you were, or I accept that, that's fine,
well,
whatever. But I'm not gonna take the initiative to say, you were really shitty then, unless you were really shitty.
No, right. And in that context, the one time you're talking about, I might have said something about it eventually.
Oh, you think?
I might have.
Oh, well. I love that it's so rare that you know the time I'm talking about.
Yep, I do know.
I could have this conversation with other people and similar thing. They wouldn't know which one
I use my wife for an example. Because when two people live together, these things come up all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you do think, or at least I do, think about, okay, is this worth bringing up or not? And for me, I discount anything about, like, well, do I want to deal with this person's reaction to it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want someone to be something that stops them from talking to me because they're worried about how I'm going to react. So it's all about me, actually. Like, for example, with you in our situation, so I have to ask myself, did he really do anything at all, or is that just all me and my own head?
Is it real?
Right. And if I decide that, okay, yeah, that was a real thing, was it personal? Right? Like, yeah. Did it really have anything to do with
me
personally?
Is it something that I should be addressing? Yeah.
Exactly.
And then, well, and then I also think the, is there any indication that this will be a problem? If I think something really was a one-off for some reason, I may not bother.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm like, why dredge it up if it's not?
What it ultimately comes down to, and the reason I might have said something to you about it, would be, what it ultimately comes down to is, if the tables were turned, would I want him to say something to me?
Which I think is very good perspective to do, because a lot of people, if they find it slight enough, won't say, because they don't want the other person to feel bad. But if you stop and think about it, depending on who it is, but in a lot of cases they would feel better knowing and being able to process and deal with it rather than have the possibility in there. I mean, like, if you're not a friend who has proven that you'll do that, then I'm always going to wonder if you're a friend who I'm hurting the feelings of and you're just not telling me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, if you come out and tell me sometimes, and this, you know, I've had this with bosses too, they're like, you know, if there's a problem, let me know. And I'm like, okay, there's no problem. But when there is, I make sure I tell them, first of all, to fix the problem, but also so that they know I am willing to do this. If you're not hearing me tell you problems, it's clearly not because I'm hiding them, as evidenced here when I'm telling you about a problem.
That's right, that's right. So
I think that's a good perspective, but in all that, I can understand that. I can understand why people wouldn't tell people things.
Sure, sure. And if I don't talk to somebody about something, it's because I've figured out that this is my issue, or for one way or the other, I've decided it's... I don't need that conversation to happen.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
need it to happen.
Yeah.
So I don't see why it needs
and
to happen.
And especially when you're in a marriage, you have to do that a lot. Because forget how you approach it. If you approached everything, you would never have any time.
That's right. You'd just
for
be
anything else.
Talking about problems
it's
all the
like
time.
It's like the sheer end count of interactions
yep.
means if I tried to process every even slightly negative one, we would never have time for anything else.
That's right, that's right.
So you have to decide, is this an impact on our relationship?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this a problem? Like, that kind of thing. And even then, the timing. I have really learned the art of wait for a time when you guys are doing awesome, and then maybe try and talk about a thing that happened in the past, as opposed to talking about it at the time when everybody flips out.
No, but that, yeah, the one time you're talking about, out of all the time we've been doing this, that's probably the only time where I, you know, before you said anything, I was considering, do I need to talk to him about this?
See, and I wonder,
I don't know if
the audience could know, because on paper, I've engaged, like, that's a fairly standard behavior for my dealing with you.
No, no.
Just in the bare bones.
Yep, yep, yep.
But I definitely crossed lines that time. In fact, I'm trying to remember. I think it may have been a sleep depth thing or something. Like, I was not in my right mind, and afterwards I was like, what the hell?
Well, that was part of it was that was part of it was that even in that podcast, you mentioned how you hadn't been feeling well, hadn't slept or whatever, which was all part of it. It's like, well, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it if he just wasn't himself or whatever.
But nobody said, I wonder if other people noticed, because that can be a component. If you're close enough, you're like, there's a different tone to this that I recognize because I know him, you know?
Maybe, but, or it could just be that, you know, even though we've done 332 of these, if someone's even listened to them all, there's still a lot of subtleties about a relationship that they still might not understand. They might not be able to tell the difference between, okay, so Tony's acting mean in this case, and it doesn't faze William at all, but he's acting what looks to me like the same mean in this case, and it bothers William.
Yeah.
What's the difference there? And it's very subtle stuff.
Well,
it's mostly has to do with our relationship off the air.
I think we've stopped caring as much now, but in the beginning, you and I, if we ever had an argument, would go to great pains afterwards to tell the audience, like, we're still friends. We're still going to do... Remember? We used to do that all the time. Mommy and Daddy aren't getting divorced.
Yeah.
Like, but I noticed a while back that we will still occasionally have, like, those arguments, and we don't bother with that shit anymore.
No.
It's like, you know what? If at this point you still think that kind of thing is going to ruin us, you're not actually listening to the show.
No.
We are super over time, so... next week's going to be a double episode, so that's going to be fun.
Yep. Hopefully it won't be too hot.
Yeah.
Because it's even kind of hot right
now. I'm starting to get a little... I'm going to have to take a swim right after this. Yeah. All right. Tell us how bad a friend you think I am on the blog.
You're not a bad friend, by the way. I don't think.
You don't know.
Well...
I could be.
I mean, I...
When you find out all this shit I've done, when your house finally falls into that sinkhole... You'll know.
Yeah.
When you find out all the horror movies I've watched learning how to sell your soul to Satan, specifically, just for an Xbox One.
I don't think Satan would want it.
That's why I only got an Xbox One. I'm lying, people. I don't have an Xbox One. go to the blog and talk to us about this shit. I don't know. I think it's interesting. Did you see those movies? Do you think I'm wrong? Are you mad because you didn't fast forward? And I know I hate that in podcasts where they're like, skip ahead if you don't want to know. I'm like, I really don't
want to.
Where
would I skip ahead to?
And I also don't want to. It feels weird to, like, skip a chunk out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, this thing. Sorry, I ruined Blackcoat's daughter and a little bit of Spider-Man, maybe. I don't know. enjoy your week, people. Live your life. And everybody pick on William so I don't have to.
Yep.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.